Welcome, everyone, to another edition of BAMS Radio, as we're about to preview the Alabama Crimson Tide's SEC opener, as the top-ranked team in college football will travel to undefeated Vanderbilt. When did you think you'd ever say that? As Derek Mason and the Commodores are 3-0 following a 14-7 home win over the number 18-ranked Kansas State Wildcats of a longtime coach Bill Snyder in his second tenure in Manhattan, Kansas. But I'm your host, Drew DeArmond, with Thomas Watts, the wizard behind the curtain, my co-host and producer extraordinaire. And our third amigo, as always, William Redfish Barger, 1992 national champion from 89 to 93, a member of the Crimson Tide, and one of the foremost insiders with the Crimson Tide program. He does an outstanding job. We always enjoy getting his insight into Alabama. And William, welcome tonight to BAMS Radio. How are you doing?
Doing great, guys. How are y'all?
And I guess, first of all, we got to take a look back at Colorado State. 41-23 win for the Crimson Tide. It was a very impressive performance by the ones on offense, I felt like, except for maybe a couple of areas in short yardage, and didn't finish a couple of drives, but then that allowed Andy Papanastas to make a 43- and 46-yard field goal to continue his hot start to the year. Now 7 of 9 on field goal attempts. The defense down, five linebackers, and really they ended up down a sixth in the second half when we didn't see Jamie Mosley. So they had a lot of young guys on the field. A guy like Joshua McMillan, who is someone who's been a third-team scout team player pretty much his whole career, played a lot of snaps and ended up, I think, taking a toll on Alabama in the second half. But, William, overall, just your impressions on what you saw from the Crimson Tide this past Saturday night in Bryant-Denny Stadium.
I was pleased with it. The one thing that I will say is, that's two games in a row where I thought that, Nick Saban inserted the second team quarterback in, and, it was kind of a drive stopper, took points off the board on drives that possibly could have produced at least another touchdown or maybe a field goal. But I understand why he's doing it. When you've got a dual-threat quarterback like Jalen Hurts, you never know when he's going to get hit the wrong way, fall on his shoulder, twist an ankle. So, you've got to get a true freshman who's still trying to find, a comfort level with big-time college football and get adjusted to that. You've got to get him reps. But, I like seeing what Brian Daboll's doing. I want to see more of, Bo Scarborough, getting swing passes out of the backfield. It's not a bad decision to try and get a man the size of Bo Scarborough that's, 240 pounds, runs a 4.5 40, a full head of steam, and throw him a lateral pass and unleash him. I really like seeing that. I think that's something that a guy that's been hurt going all the way back to fall camp, and Josh Jacobs, I think that's something that he can contribute to this squad as well. You hate to see, Miller Forrestall get lost for the year. But I think there's another, really dynamic player at that same position that can contribute there and maybe get some more touches. And Irv Smith, a guy that's, in the 235 range that runs a 4.5 40. I kind of wonder just how much of Brian Daboll's playbook that we've seen through the first three games. Maybe you see it get expanded a little bit Saturday. But it's funny, Drew. You I don't know how you do what you do for a living. You're having to deal with all these pissed off Alabama fans that flood the message boards and the radio call-in shows. It's almost like it doesn't matter what any offensive coordinator at Alabama does, they're always going to find something to nitpick and complain about. And, right now it seems to be the flavor of the week is, Jalen Hurts is getting too many opportunities to leave the pocket early and run. Why are we ignoring the, all the five-star running backs, and, we're not getting the ball to the five-star wide receivers enough. And, that was kind of the battle cry under the 3 years of Lane Kiffin of jet sweeps and bubble screens. And, everybody was crying about, us not establishing that, you know, kind of Jim McElwain identity of the offense, where they were kind of a run heavy team and, you know, only threw when it was a necessity. And that's what I see Brian Daboll doing, but, you know, people don't seem to be happy with that. And, you know, my point on the Colorado State game, and probably even going back to Fresno State, would be maybe Jalen Hurts isn't going through his progressions, you know, from the first, second, third, fourth option, and he's taking off and running. But when opposing defensive coordinators, and it's probably more the opposing linebackers and safeties making a bad drop and rolling to the wrong side of the field. But when you vacate the middle of the field like that, and Jalen Hurts can, you know, take off and pick up 15 or 20 yards a clip, why is that a bad idea, and why does that make people upset?
Agreed, William. I think I would give the offense an A from this past Saturday as far as the ones. I thought they played at a very high level. I thought it was Jalen Hurts' best game in a Crimson Tide uniform when you watched him go through his progressions. You know, I had one genius on the Twittersphere hit me up with that Jalen Hurts only is a one-read quarterback, and if he doesn't hit his first read, he takes off running. And his biggest example was the last pass he threw to Devontae Smith that he stared at him the whole time when it was about the third read that Jalen went through. So some of these guys that are analyzing Alabama football wouldn't know a football if it hit him in the forehead. He also told me that Alabama needed a new defensive line coach, that Carl Dunbar wasn't getting enough out of the group. And then I told him, well, if he knew everything, he needed to fax his resume to Nick Saban, and maybe they would hire him. I didn't hear much more from him after that.
Have you sent your resume to Nick yet, Greg?
Well, I guess he told me he might hire my ass a couple weeks ago, but I haven't gotten a phone call. So I guess they've liked the progress of the offensive line under Brent Key. I think that group's making progress. I still don't think, you know, they've completely gelled. We'll see how much, you know, how they play against Vanderbilt. I thought they were better in pass protection against Colorado State, and I thought they started to get some of that push in the running game. I talked to Mike Johnson this week on my show. He tended to agree. He really thought that the left side was finally, it was making some progress, and they were starting to come together as a group. So we'll see. And I will say this too, William. I hated to see Miller Forstall go down on his first catch of the year. But it does open up, the option for him, and I'm sure they're going to take advantage of that, of medically redshirting the young man from Cartersville, Georgia. And it gives one of Coach Saban's favorites, Ronnie Clark, maybe an avenue to get on the field some, even though it was reported in practice today that Brian Robinson was seen in the media viewing period working with the H's, which is a very interesting development. But I would think Ronnie Clark, with his experience, would be given the option first, and they would try to redshirt Brian Robinson. But just what are your thoughts on, you know, and of course we know Hale Hinches and Irv Smith, as you mentioned, will get most of the rest. But do you think Ronnie Clark may have a role now?
Well, starting first with the offensive line, and, you know, I realize it's a small sample size. But, you know, through three games, I think, and I totally agree with you, I still think it's a work in progress. You know, the thing that's really jumped off the page at me is you haven't seen any of the pre-snap penalties, especially at the end of last year, that kind of plagued the Alabama offensive line. You know, you don't see the false starts and illegal procedures and that kind of stuff that, you know, was occurring, you know, three, four times a game. I mean, I think that's benefited them as well. You know, as far as Ronnie Clark, you know, man, when you've got two surgically rebuilt Achilles heels, I just think that's a red flag. I mean, I'm not going to name any names, but I've got a former roommate of mine whose career in the NFL was ended because of that same, you know, having to have both of them redone. It's, you know, kind of a career killer. I kind of expect, you know, Smith and Hinches, you know, to be the focal point there. And it doesn't surprise me. I had not heard that until you told me that Brian Robinson, you know, had been spotted working out with the H's. When you look at his size and his speed, you know, I know Brian Daboll, you know, spoke to a lot of people post-spring practice, pre-fall camp, about really wanting to try and involve him this year and possibly not redshirt him. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact, if you look at, the guys that are on campus that are veterans, Bo Scarborough, Damian Harris, and even to a lesser extent, Josh Jacobs. It's kind of hard to call him a veteran, even though he's a second-year player. All three of those guys missed time last year, and in Jacobs' case, last year and this year, with injuries. So it makes sense for them to, kind of want to involve Najee Harris and Brian Robinson, in the offensive game plan, not just to, get them reps to be a reserve that's ready to step up, but, you never know. Bo Scarborough's got a pretty checkered history with injuries going all the way back to his sophomore year of high school. You've got to kind of try and keep everybody happy with playing time and touches, to kind of prevent what happened, what was that, the 2014 season when Alvin Kamara, Tyron Jones, and LT Tenpenny, all got frustrated and transferred out. So, I think you bring up a valid point as far as Ronnie being involved, but I just don't know how much involvement he'll have.
I want to jump back real quick to something y'all were bringing up about Jalen Hurts. And I just want to lay out a scenario because I think it could legitimately come to pass regarding how good Jalen Hurts has looked thus far in this season. And it goes on a couple of assumptions, so just bear with me. Give me 30 seconds. If you assume that the Heisman Trophy is won in November, Jalen Hurts is going to play an LSU team where the game's still going to be hyped up, even though I think the Muppet down in Baton Rouge is going to run that team into the ground by the time Alabama comes on the schedule. A Mississippi State team that's pretty good, and an Auburn team that's pretty good. And that ignores anybody should Alabama be in the SEC championship game. Of course, assuming Alabama continues to win, et cetera, et cetera. But I could see am I crazy in saying it's very plausible that Jalen Hurts could be in the thick of the Heisman Trophy conversation come November, assuming health? Like, do you think he's that good? Go ahead, William.
Thomas, he was in the thick of the Heisman hunt going into November of his true freshman year last year. Bruce Feldman. Was kind of leading the charge there along with Pete Futak from the College Football News website. And, I think Aranda slowing him down last year versus LSU kind of quieted that down a little bit. Then it kind of jumped back up when he had, a 300-yard passing performance against Auburn. And got out in space on one run and humiliated Carl Lawson in the Auburn game. But then, of course, it all kind of went away once they got into the, the postseason play with the SEC championship and the playoffs. But, yeah, I mean, he certainly could be a factor, in that race, in my opinion. When you look at it, the star players of the best teams – always get a long, hard look for that award. And, right now, if you look at just a small sample size, that's why I'm glad that the College Football Playoff Committee does what they do from October 1st and on versus taking the month of September out of the equation. If you look at what's happened in the first three games, he's the best player at two different positions on the Alabama football team. He's the best quarterback. And he's the best rusher. Now, there's going to be a lot of Alabama fans that, come screaming in and saying, well, he can't make this throw and he can't make that throw. And, we should be giving the ball more to Damian Harris. But, part of being a quarterback is taking what the defense gives you. And part of being a quarterback for Nick Saban is protecting the football and not generating turnovers. And, I could provide numerous, statistical evidence to, prove that to be true. Even Coach Saban has a saying that he said publicly that his goal on the offensive side of the football is to have every offensive series end with a kick, whether it's a punt, whether it's an attempt at a field goal, or whether it's an attempt at an extra point. As long as it ends with a kick, he's good with it. Which that means is don't turn the ball over. And so far through three games, I think that's one, you know, major area of improvement that Jalen Hurts has accomplished so far for this season. You know, when you look at the first snap of his first college game, you know, last year versus USC, it was a fumble. And, you know, he did, you know, lay the ball on the ground a lot while he was running last year, you know, in some ball security areas, trying to pick up extra yards. You know, he's yet to do that this year. But to piggyback on what you just said, Thomas, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, but what you're saying is not far-fetched as far as him being a possible Heisman Trophy candidate.
Yes, if he continues to protect the football, and Alabama is one of only three teams in the country that hasn't suffered a turnover, and one of those others being Miami, but Miami's only played one game due to Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma, the storms that have blown through Texas and Florida, respectively. The Crimson Tide has done a remarkable job of avoiding mistakes and putting themselves in a really good position. Jalen Hurts is playing at a very high level. As I said, I would give the offense an A grade against Colorado State. But William, to switch conversation to the defense, there's been some concern about that side of the ball, about the pass rush. I heard Will Lowry, former Alabama defensive back, talking about, and he had some of the same concerns I did. I'm not as worried about the pass rush as I am that the run defense has been a little soft, but I think a lot of that has to do with the linebacker core being decimated because there's been some missed assignments in the passing game. Coach Saban was talking about the mental errors. And just overall, you can't lose that many guys in one area of your defense because Coach Saban's scheme is so complicated. Communication is a big part of it. They're having to play a lot of inexperienced and young guys, especially in that linebacker core.
Yeah, and, you know, when they had the full – you know, fill of their linebackers. You know, they had, you know, their edge setter at Jack and Anthony Jennings versus Florida State. They had Rashawn Evans, and they had their two, you know, starting rabbit edge rushers and Christian Miller and Terrell Lewis. You know, I think that was a, you know, kind of a point that a lot of people were picking Florida State to win that ball game over was they felt like Florida State was going to have some success, you know, running the football in Alabama, and they did. You know, I think they had, correct me if I'm wrong, it was somewhere between 48 and 60 yards rushing in that game. And so, you know, getting a guy like Rashawn Evans and Anthony Jennings back, you know, to me, that would be the toughest decision if I was Nick Saban. You know, going into the Vanderbilt game this weekend, you know, you certainly want to get, you know, a guy like Dylan Moses and Rashawn Evans and Anthony Jennings, the three out of the five that are, you know, available possibly. You certainly want to get them involved, but I personally would be real careful, you know, about doing that. You know, Jennings had to have a surgery. You know, Rashawn's got a, you know, a growing injury. It can be problematic if you put him back out there too soon. And, you know, they're going up against a team Saturday, albeit it's 3-0. You know, who cares if they beat Kansas State? I mean, what, 2 years ago, a five-loss Auburn team went to Kansas State and beat them at home on Thursday night on ESPN. You know, if you just look at the talent level and the matchup of this Alabama-Vanderbilt game, you know, I think that's, you know, of course, that's why Nick Saban gets paid the amount of money that he gets paid, is to make these kind of decisions. I don't know how early and often I would play those two guys, you know, considering the level of injuries that they had. But, you know, Alabama's got one of the top medical staffs in college football that makes that determination. You know, and certainly a guy that's got a proven track record, Nick Saban. You know, for pulling that string. You know, I just think that, you know, they're going into a team that's probably very well coached. Their players are buying in and believing. But Alabama, when you start looking at, talent level, this is kind of a no-brainer. One side of the field Saturday is going to be much more talented than the other. And, going back to the Colorado State game, Drew, when you talk about that stuff, when they had the starters in there and they weren't experimenting with different guys, the offense really didn't have trouble moving the ball, converting third down, scoring points. If they hadn't have inserted Tua when they did, that could have been 48 points instead of 41. The defense was being pretty stingy. I think for the first 2.5 quarters, the Alabama defense, being as depleted as they are, did a pretty good job against, a team that went to a bowl game last year. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to against Vanderbilt Saturday, is to, see how Brian Daboll, maybe he peels another layer off the onion in his playbook. How do they attack him? How do they attack Vanderbilt? Does Vanderbilt maybe try and take a linebacker and spy Jalen Hurts to prevent some of these 15 to 20 yard, gaping runs that he's been able to pull off? If they do that, in my mind, the counterpoint to that is, if they do spy him with a linebacker, that sets up some really, explosive play scenarios and run pass option plays. You run him out there at the spy, either to the left or the right. If the spy drops in coverage, Jalen takes off and run. If the spy decides to rush, you drop the ball over the spy's head to a Hale Hinches or a Calvin Ridley, or maybe another play like you saw from Robert Foster last Saturday. So, I think Alabama's in the driver's seat with this game versus Vanderbilt Saturday. Vanderbilt's the one that's playing at home. They have to kind of prove, after Nick Saban called them a top 25 football team, that they actually belong there. And, I just think that, Jeremy Pruitt and Brian Daboll just has to play, fundamentally sound football on both sides of the ball. And, I could very easily see, if the execution is good, I could very easily see them covering the spread.
And I agree with that. I think the spread I looked today, and it started at 19.5. Now it's 18.5. Again, I'd give the defense probably a C+. They gave up too much in the second and in the fourth quarters, but I think they did lose some intensity too. There was a lot made of what Sean Dion Hamilton and Hootie Jones said in the locker room afterwards. I was there with both those guys, and they talked about, and Sean Dion Hamilton called the defensive effort pathetic and said they were going to have a come to Jesus meeting and a team meeting without the coaches on Monday. Not known if that took place. Minkah Fitzpatrick was quoted as saying it had not, and that they were going to be fine. But you were a part of the Alabama football team, and of course, you played the sport your whole life. How significant are players only meetings, and do you think that needs to happen with this defense, or is it just a matter of getting the pieces back on the field?
I totally agree with what you just said. I think part of it's getting the pieces back out there, number one. Number two, I think what Sean Dion Hamilton was trying to express, and he probably, turned into Nick Saban there for the brief minute that he said it, as far as the players only meeting. Those don't take place very often. Actually, they take place every day before practice when they're in their individual meetings. But what Sean Dion Hamilton was trying to express to all these young players, and you saw a lot of them. I had to, get on my phone and look up who number 25 was. I was surprised to see Xavier McKinney in there as early as he was. But, there's a standard that's been set, going all the way back to, the 2008 season when, Rolando McClain and Donta Hightower were, and Mark Barron and those guys were setting it. And I think that's who he was talking to, was the young players. That, there's an expectation and a standard, it's in any organization that's successful, both in sports and the private sector. And I think that's what Sean Dion was trying to say. You saw some defensive linemen get absorbed by blocks. They had trouble separating. Colorado State had some success running the football. Alabama had trouble stopping them on third down conversions. So, Drew, this happens every year. I can go back to the 2012 season, after a national championship team. That's why you can't really get too upset or too excited about what happens in the month of September. After flooring, the game was over with in the third quarter. After Alabama floored Michigan in the season opener of 2012, their home opener against Western Kentucky, a first-round draft pick and DJ Fluker gave up four sacks the next week to Western Kentucky. Does that mean that DJ Fluker's not a great right tackle? I mean, he's still playing in the NFL, even though he's at guard now. But, it's just hard to get the players' attention. You can sit there and tell them, how good a Western Kentucky or a Colorado State or a Vanderbilt really is, but it falls on deaf ears. I think that's one of the unique things about, playing in the Southeastern Conference is, there's certain games that the coaches and the players circle on that schedule every year. Nick Saban's done a great job of getting season openers against quality out-of-conference opponents. But, it's no different than it was 10 years ago when he first started. They circle that Tennessee game, they circle that LSU game, and they circle that Auburn game. And, I kind of laughed at what Thomas was saying, about the Mississippi State LSU game. That was painful to watch. And, anybody that thinks, and certainly, the ejections, contributed to the final score being what it was. But, truth be told, before they even occurred, Mississippi State was better on both sides of the line of scrimmage than LSU was. And, that's kind of where this LSU program is. I personally thought, and I was actually told this by a member of the Alabama coaching staff, they were very concerned with what, the new offensive coordinator, Matt Canada, was going to bring to the table. He had a reputation of, doing a lot of pre-snap movement and motion that confused the defense. But, at the end of the day, they didn't have an offensive line that was good enough for 3 years to get Leonard Fournette the Heisman Trophy. They still don't have one this year. Danny Etling is still Danny Etling. When you look at their front seven personnel on the defensive side of the football, they've kind of got some thick thumper linebackers that just aren't equipped to get out there and deal with a phenomenal athlete that's playing quarterback for Mississippi State, Nick Fitzgerald. I expect by the time they pop up on the schedule in November, that they're probably going to be a bruised and battered team. And I would say the same thing about Mississippi State. If something were to happen to Nick Fitzgerald or Jeffrey Simmons, Mississippi State could be a much, much different team than what Alabama might see in November. And again, I kind of go back to, what Nick Saban and Jeremy Pruitt was able to do to Nick Fitzgerald last year. That was not a pretty thing that took place in Bryant-Denny Stadium in November.
No, it was not. It was a complete beatdown. And really the last great performance out of that football team on both sides of the ball, I believe the final score was 52-3, and it really wasn't that close. I just remember after every defensive series, when Alabama would get a stop, Nick Fitzgerald, I watched him from the press box. He would take a deep breath when he got back to the sideline. I don't think he had seen a defense that fast.
Well, Drew, I actually didn't get to see the game until Sunday, but I thought about you because I knew how adamant you were about Alabama taking this kid out of here in Birmingham from Shades Valley High School. But you got to give credit you know, there's a reason, you know, that Dan Mullen has never been able to move on to a better program than Mississippi State. He doesn't interview well. You know, he doesn't really have good people skills as far as, you know, in the public sector, you know, doing interviews on TV. And, you know, he was the leading candidate two different times in the last, you know, 7 years for the Miami job, and just bombed his interview. But I got to say this, man, that guy can find quarterbacks that nobody else thinks is worthy of a SEC caliber scholarship offer, and, you know, turn him into what he did with that Dak Prescott and what he's done with Nick Fitzgerald. But that play design, from an X's and O's standpoint, when they, you know, kind of put your boy Keith Mixon from Shades Valley High School here in Birmingham in motion, you know, he kind of, you know, faked like he was going to block, and then he took off on the streak route. That was absolute football wizardry. And so you got to give, you know, for all of Dan Mullen's, you know, personality quirks, you know, when it comes to identifying and developing a quarterback and also drawing up X's and O's, you know, that the guy's got that part of it down. And I'll say this, you know, I really felt like, just from looking at him from an eye test, I thought Mississippi State's offensive line looked physically superior to LSU's. And I thought on the other side of the ball, their front seven, you know, as far as getting off the bus, was physically superior to what LSU put out on the field from an offensive line standpoint.
And before we talk about the performance we thought Alabama had in the kicking game against Colorado State, I have to ask you, since Dan Mullen and Mississippi State are the topic right now, what kind of chance do you give them of going to Athens, Georgia, and getting a win?
You know, I think if you look at what Ole Miss did to Georgia last year, you know, with Chad Kelly and you know, those wide receivers, I think Mississippi State's kind of bringing the same thing to the table. And I think even though he's a bigger guy and taller, I think Nick Fitzgerald is probably the closest thing that I've seen this year to what Jalen Hurts brings to the table. You know, he can make most of the passes. He's obviously a run threat. You know, he's got RPO capabilities. I think, you know, that's probably the biggest toss-up that I've seen, you know, in the pick sheet that I do every week with my coworkers at work, is I just put a big question mark by that one. And, you know, I just don't know. It could go either way, but certainly when you look at, you know, Kirby Smart's tenure as the defensive coordinator at Alabama and, you know, what's caused him problems, you know, three games into his second year as the head coach at Georgia, you know, Nick Fitzgerald and that Dan Mullen offense, that's a problem for Kirby. You know, gun to my head, if I had to make a pick, you know, if the same team that played LSU Saturday is fully healthy versus what I've seen out of Georgia this year, I'm going with Mississippi State. That being said, that's something that, you know, what we'll have to see is, you know, Dan Mullen's development as a head coach when he's gotten one of these big wins in the past, you know, versus a team that he probably wasn't supposed to be, like he wasn't supposed to be LSU Saturday night. You know, they've tended to have a letdown the next week. So I think that is truly a question mark game, and I think it could go either way. But it would not shock me to see them take down Kirby Smart in Georgia this Saturday.
And I know you said that Dan Mullen doesn't interview well, and that's right. His name came up prominently at Miami a couple of times, also at Penn State. I think when Bill O'Brien first left and they hired James Franklin. But if their team is as good as they were back in 2014 during Dak Prescott's junior year and they reached number one in the country, do you think we're finally going to see a university pluck Dan Mullen away? Because there could be some very interesting jobs open at the end of the season.
You know, I think if I'm Dan Mullen, you know, the guy's probably got a job as long as he wants at Mississippi State. And they have done a fantastic job from a university level, you know, at supporting him. I mean, their facilities are in the top half, or not to say the top third, you know, of the SEC. They've got a fantastic weight room. They've done some fantastic stadium renovations to, you know, back when I was playing was a dump. You know, that they've given him the checkbook, you know, to write checks as he wants to. But yeah, I think there's going to be several jobs that could possibly come open, you know, after this season's over with that, you know, if he got into a situation where, you know, if I was a, you know, one of the powers to be at Texas A&M, he would certainly get a look. If Auburn decides to do something with Gus Malzahn, you know, they've already got the personnel in place. I would kind of be scared to see what Dan Mullen could do in the SEC with a true freshman quarterback named Malik Willis, who's probably the best quarterback on Auburn's roster to execute Gus Malzahn's offense. You know, he's a Nick Marshall guy, you know, that's got the ability to do the RPOs and the zone reads, that kind of stuff. But, you know, Dan Mullen is going to continue to get looks from bigger schools. You know, I guess it's up to him to, you know, maybe hire a personality coach to teach him how to, you know, execute these interviews a little bit better. But again, you know, when you look at it, he's in an envious position over there in the state of Mississippi. Next year for the 2019 recruiting cycle, the state of Mississippi is loaded from top to bottom with probably the most amount of talent to come out of that state in 20 to 25 years. Ole Miss is probably fixing to get the hammer dropped on him. You know, he could sit over there at Mississippi State and keep winning Egg Bowls and beating LSU and, you know, winning, you know, 9 games a year. And, you know, the people in Starkville are happy with that. But I do think if you're a Dan Mullen, you know, you've been to Utah with Urban Meyer, you've been to Florida with Urban Meyer, you recruited Cam Newton, you know, you produced Tim Tebow. You know, I do think there's got to be a what-if factor there, you know, from Dan Mullen. If he could get in the right place that can attract, you know, elite talent and has all the resources, where he's got to wonder what if. But we'll just have to wait and see. And, you know, from what I saw Saturday night, you know, he's got the horses. He doesn't have the depth, but he's got, you know, a first 22 on the Mississippi State roster that can cause problems for pretty much every team left on his schedule.
And they do right now look like they're taking advantage of what could still be a real rebuilding and weaker SEC and trying to jump into the upper half of the Western Division. But, William, before we kind of talk some more SEC football, I wanted to go back and finish our review of Colorado State. Alabama on the special team side of the ledger, I thought they were very solid in the kicking game. I'd probably have given that an A-. J.K. Scott missed a 52-yard field goal, but he hit it well. It was nearly good. We saw Papanastos extend his range a little bit and prove that he can make a kick from 43 and 46 yards. He's now 7 of 9 and has really been a pleasant surprise the first 3 weeks of the season. I think they do need a little bit more out of the return game, and Nick Saban was asked about that at his press conference this evening. He said he thought they'd done a good job, but that they probably needed to do a little bit better job of blocking. We've talked about maybe getting Ruggs more involved, maybe even as a punt returner. But overall, I thought the coverage units were pretty solid, and we've continued to see Mac Wilson, who would get a game ball from me. Once again, a really good special teams player. But just your thoughts on the kicking game and what we saw against Colorado State, there was a lot of questions about it, especially at place kicker to start the season, but it's been pretty solid thus far.
Well, you know. And I don't really know the formula or the criteria that ESPN uses to, you know, rank field goal kickers, but they've got Papanastos ranked number one. And that's a, you know, like, you know, sailing across the Pacific Ocean from San Francisco to Australia. from what you and I were talking about, Drew, after the first scrimmage that I went to.
Oh, yeah. And the spring was a disaster.
You, yeah. You know, how bad not only Papanastas, but the true freshman Bulova looked. And I thought it was interesting that Nick Saban kind of chimed in his press conference this week and, you know, said where he's seen multiple place kickers struggle. I don't know if it's with the surface or, you know, the stadium or whatever, but at least according to Nick Saban, he's seen several field goal kickers struggle with accuracy, you know, over there at the new Mercedes Stadium in Atlanta since they played. But certainly, I mean, I think what a lot of people thought was going to be a weakness for Alabama, you know, has turned into a strength. And I totally agree with you. We talked about this last week. You know, I don't know if going on the road, you know, being your first SEC road game is maybe that's the right or the wrong time to maybe insert Henry Ruggs as the punt returner. But from what I've seen out of the young man, hell, I'd even go on to say that after what I saw Robert Foster do with a, you know, a routine 15-yard, you know, dig route and what he did with it Saturday and Bryant Denny, maybe he needs to get involved with it too. But, you know, I think, you know, at least for the small three-game sample that we've got, certainly the special teams has been better than what we all expected it to be. You know, my final review of the Colorado State game would be, you know, I guess I could probably go along with you and give the offense an A. I'd give the defense probably a solid B. The starters would probably get an A-, you know, based on what they did. But, you know, I think, you know, when you start looking at that and going up against Vanderbilt this weekend, you know, I want to see guys like, you know, Daron Payne, Raekwon Davis, Sean Hamm, you know, do a better job of, you know, not only standing their opposing blockers up, but shedding those blocks and making plays, you know, for no gain. You know, they're playing, you know, Keith Holcomb, who I think's done a really good job. You know, Mac Wilson's a guy that flashes, but he's probably in the same situation, you know, that Reuben Foster was in early in his career where, you know, his athleticism is so off the charts. I think sometimes he plays a little bit tight and hesitant. You know, getting Jennings and Evans back, depending, and Moses, depending how, you know, much they get inserted into this game this weekend. You know, I would give the offense an A-, the defense a solid B, and special teams an A as well. You know, there's going to be a lot worse football teams that this Alabama 2017 unit plays on their SEC schedule versus what they saw Saturday versus Colorado State. I mean, Mike Bobo, I thought, did a great job.
Yes.
Of taking what the Alabama defense gave them. You know, and I think, you know, Bobo's done a really good job of picking up and, you know, taking what Jim McElwain left him out there. You know, they're a solid football team. I mean, they're not a top 25 team, but, you know, they're going to go to a bowl game this year.
Would you? I mean, am I crazy not to think they might win the Mountain West?
No, I think so. I mean, and, you know, that trend kind of started with Coach Mack. And, you know, I think Bobo's done a really good job of it. You know, he's got, you know, when you look at those guys, you know, got a former Alabama offensive lineman out there that's the offensive coordinator, even though, let's don't kid ourselves, Bobo's the one that's calling the plays. But, you know, I think Will Friend has done a really good job with that offensive line, with what he has to work with. So, you know, you've got two guys that are both former SEC football players and, you know, have kind of cut their teeth, you know, both Bobo and Will Friend at Georgia as coaches. And, you know, they've gone out there and, you know, they've put a product out there on the field where, you know, I think they can kind of be proud of it with what they do every Saturday, win or lose.
Yeah, and they've done a very solid job. And, I think they're going to be a force to reckon with in the Mountain West Conference. And it's going to be a quality opponent, I think, when everyone looks back at it, like Western Kentucky was. during that 2012 season for Alabama. But now they travel to Nashville to play Derek Mason and the undefeated Commodores. And to me, this is a bad matchup for Vandy. They've got a pro-style offense. Ralph Webb, who could be their all-time leading rusher before he's said and done. They've played Middle Tennessee, which is a solid mid-major program, Alabama A&M, which is a SWAC-level team that they should hammer, and then they beat Kansas State. Ralph Webb only averaging 2.6 yards per rush. I know Alabama's run defense has been a little spotty early, but to me, and from what I understand, their offensive line has still been a work in progress. I don't see Vandy being able to run the football that well, and I know Shermer's improved, but he's not a mobile guy. I think Alabama's going to give him some different looks and blitz him. I think Alabama's going to win this game 31-7. I just don't think this is a good matchup for Vandy at all. What are your thoughts?
I agree with everything that you just said, and I think that's kind of where you know, where Vegas has the line set at 18 points, you know, I think that's probably a pretty solid line. You know, look, they've kind of, you know, played some inferior opponents, like you just said. I think probably the Kansas State matchup, you know, like we talked about earlier, you know, 2 years ago, a five-loss Auburn team, you know, went to Manhattan on a Thursday night and out-athleted them. You know, that was a team that, you know, didn't have the same talent level that Alabama does. You know, I think what Nick Saban and Brian Daboll and Jeremy Pruitt, maybe possibly prior to that injury dynamic that took place versus Florida State, you know, I think the game that they've probably had circled on their schedule, you know, where the experimentation and, you know, what can we get away with and what do we need to work on, where all that stuff kind of, you know, would probably stop and start, was, you know, the game next weekend versus Ole Miss. And, you know, that dynamic has even changed a little bit with the injury to A.J. Brown. I think the prediction that you just made is probably what I would side with. We'll just have to wait and see, I think, how Derek Mason decides to, you know, because he is the, you know, the Nick Saban, Jeremy Pruitt, Kirby Smart of that Vanderbilt program, and he's a proven commodity as a defensive coordinator. And, you know, you have to, you know, give him some props for what he's been able to do with that program up there.
Yep, especially losing Zach Cunningham. Pardon me.
Yeah, and you know, that's a first-round draft pick. But I think we have to wait and see, you know, maybe an hour after kickoff, you know, at 2:30 Central Time, as to how they choose to go about trying to defend Jalen Hurts. You know, whether that game turns into a 31-10 or 31-7, you know, type game, you know, versus being a little bit more of a nail biter. I think that's going to come down to, you know, the way Derek Mason chooses to decide to defend Jalen Hurts versus the way Nick Saban and Brian Daboll, you know, how much do they loosen the rope up that I think that they've had, you know, on Jalen Hurts through the first three games? Because I do think there is a rope there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they attack. I've liked where the offense is going under Coach Daboll. I like the swing passes to Bo Scarborough, the way they used him in the passing game and against Colorado State, also Damian Harris. And I liked what I saw with the limited touches they gave Josh Jacobs. They came out in a split backfield. Going to be interested to see if they do more of that against Vandy to give that defense some different looks, William.
Well, you know, Drew, I would pose this question to anybody that, you know, thinks it's a bad idea to, you know, throw a 5 to 7 yard lateral pass to a man the size of Bo Scarborough, you know, give him a full head of steam and space, you know, that's 240 pounds, runs a 4.5 40. And let's don't forget, you know, his senior year when he worked out at multiple camps, there were some recruiting analysts that saw him get asked to, because he came out the same year as Leonard Fournette, you know, nobody was going to give Bo Scarborough the number one running back rating over Leonard Fournette. That just wasn't going to happen. But he got asked, you know, in several camps to work out at wide receiver. And there were several people in the industry that, you know, after watching him work out at wide receiver, that felt like, you know, if some, you know, high school coach or college coach made the decision to move him to wide receiver, that he would have been rated a five-star wide receiver along with his five-star running back rating. And so, you know, you've got that. You've got Damian Harris. I think you'll probably see a 100% Josh Jacobs being involved Saturday in Nashville. And, you know, you've got a guy, in my opinion, that's, you know, really, really talented. I think he's trying to, you know, still get adjusted to the speed of the game at the, you know, the college level. You know, the number one overall player in the country last year, Najee Harris. You know, and if Daboll, you know, kind of follows through with his plans, and he does involve Brian Robinson, you know, in the H-back rotation, you know, when you start talking about, you know, getting him there, who some people felt like was a borderline five-star running back prospect last year, along with all those wide receivers, I mean, you know, pick your poison. I mean, how are you going to slow that, you know, that train down if you're an opposing defensive coordinator? You know, and that's kind of what, you know, you and I've had this conversation off the air, Christ, going back 3 years now. You know, I can remember in 2014 when I first, you know, saw Jalen Hurts. You know, his average output on a Friday night playing high school football in Houston was 250 yards passing for two touchdowns and 150 yards rushing with two touchdowns. You know, he kind of approached that Saturday versus Colorado State. But if he can ever get to where it's consistent output, and, you know, I would take that 50 yards off of his rushing total and maybe apply it to his passing total to where it was somewhere between 250 and 300 yards passing for two touchdowns, 100 yards rushing and two touchdowns or one touchdown. I just don't see how you stop that. And, you know, I think that, you know, I was really worried after I went to that first scrimmage and, you know, they were kind of forcing him to be a pocket passer. And that's just not who he is. You know, if that's what you want, you know, give Jalen Hurts the number 33 and turn him into a running back and let, you know, Tua Tagovailoa as a true freshman, you know, be your pocket passer. But when you look at what he does well and what he's proven to do well, if they'll keep building this offense with all of those talented running backs, all those talented wide receivers, if you just peel that that onion back one layer at a time each week, you know, I think once they get into, you know, that difficult part of their schedule, the only really difficult part of their schedule minus Florida State in the month of November, you know, you might could possibly have, if Nick Saban allows it to happen, and, you know, that's the $64,000 question, is will he allow it? But if he allows it, you could have a RPO zone read with five-star running backs and five-star wide receivers that, you know, this team offensively, I think, could carry the defense.
And I thought that this might happen once the injuries occurred during Florida State, that the offense would have to carry this team. And I think and I do think the defense has a chance to still be really good, top 10 nationally. But we're not going to see the lineup we saw for the first three quarters against Florida State because of the injuries. But they can still be very good. But this offense has the talent, the ability to carry the defense. I agree, William. No doubt about that. I think they have a chance to be really special, especially as Jalen continues to get more and more comfortable in this contest. And this is the last few minutes of BAMS Radio for this week, as we've reviewed the Colorado State win and taken a look at Vanderbilt. Really looking forward to this trip to Nashville. I think Alabama is going to come out as I'll give Keith Holcomb a shout out. I agree with you. He's played at a very high level. He's kind of been the breakout guy on defense. He and Levi Wallace, who had four more pass breakups last week. But he said you got to set your jaw for SEC play. And I think they know that Bandy's going to come in very excited in this game, but that they can make a statement to the rest of college football and get off to the right start in the SEC and be 1-0 in SEC play, move to 4-0 on the year. Fully expecting that. I think it's going to happen, and just got late word from a great source. Looks like that Anthony Jennings has made a lot of progress this week. He and Rashawn Evans are expected to play, but William, as you mentioned earlier in the broadcast, I think you believe that they're going to be on a pitch count, and that we'll also see Dylan Moses situationally.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, Moses is on a pitch count too. He's under concussion protocol. But again, you know, when you look at this matchup, and you touched on this, Drew, earlier in the broadcast, you know, Kyle is, you know, he's a very efficient quarterback, but he is not the type of quarterback that gives a Nick Saban, you know, Jeremy Pruitt slash Kirby Smart defense problems. He's a pro-style quarterback. He's not a threat to run. You know, if you look at the matchups, and I think that's what it all comes down to. You know, in every football game, it basically comes down to, you know, who's better on both sides of the line of scrimmage? Well, that's a no-brainer for this game. You know, does Vanderbilt have a game changer at wide receiver, you know, that can bail Kyle Schumer out at times? No, they don't. You know, I think the goal of this game, you know, kind of where the onus is, you know, Tosh Lapoy, Jeremy Pruitt, Nick Saban, you know, generating a pass rush. You know, that's what's been missing, in my opinion, through all three games. You know, even before Terrell Lewis and Christian Miller, you know, got hurt, yeah, they were able to affect DeAndre Francois against FSU. But, you know, I think that's what the onus on this game is, you know. You know, Lewis and Miller are not going to be available until at least after December 1st, if they're available then. You know, get those young guys like Chris Allen, Dylan Moses, you know, a veteran like Rashawn Evans, if he's ready to go, and how much, you know, you want to actually, you know, put him out there and expose him. You know, if you put him out there and he restrains that growing, you know, he's either looking at surgery or, you know, 2 to 3 more weeks recovery time. That's kind of where my concern is. You know, I've seen some, you know, lineups this week in practice from people that have been there where, you know, they've put Mac Wilson out there on the edge and, you know, and asked him to rush the passer. But that's where I think the onus is. You know, through three games out of the 2017 Alabama team, is you haven't really seen that production from guys like Isaiah Buggs, you know, Raekwon Davis, Deron Payne, Deshaun Hand. You know, that's where you need to get pressure from, is with those, you know, those front seven guys. And so, you know, give a guy like, you know, LeBron Ray a shot. You know, let's see what he can do. Or Quinnen Williams. You know, Drew, there's a guy that you and I talked about 3 years ago that we didn't really feel like was going to be a part of the Alabama football program. You know, into September, going into October of his third year, in Johnny Dwight. And he's flashed and made some plays in the first three games. So, you know, I just think when you start looking at matchups, you know, Alabama should win this game. They should win it, you know, win it handily. But I think how that scenario turns out depends on, you know, whether Nick Saban and Brian Daboll take the leash off of Jalen Hurts, and, you know, how many of these young guys in the front seven of Alabama's defense, you know, can Jeremy Pruitt and Tosh Lapoy develop and feel, you know, comfortable with, that they know their assignments and they don't revert back to, you know, the technique that they played in high school. You know, there's a reason, you know, I think that all Alabama fans should try and figure out as to why Nick Saban, you know, in every recruiting class tries to sign, you know, 5, 6, or 7 elite linebackers. You know, you can, you know, turn on the game film of Florida State and see them all go down in a hurry. But, I expect that game Saturday to be closely tested, maybe for a quarter and a half. But I'll be really, really, really wrong and the first person to come back on this show next week and say, I was really wrong about that if the game is close in the third quarter.
Yeah, I think that's about the way it's going to go. I think Alabama's going to pull away in the second half and ease away. We may even get to see some of Tua Tagovailoa in the fourth quarter and hope so to continue to get his feet wet. Well, William, we always appreciate the time and the insight. It's been a great hour of Bams Radio. I always enjoy the conversation. Have a great rest of your week, and we look forward to catching up with you next week. We're going to record the show a little earlier in the week next week and review the Vanderbilt game and look ahead to the SEC home opener against the Ole Miss Rebels. Thank you and have a good night.
Hey, Jerry Thomas. Thank you, guys.
That's William Redfish Barger as we are wrapping up this edition of BAMS Radio for the week. I want to appreciate the Tide Nation for listening. I know everybody's excited that BAMS Radio has become come back in this format. We appreciate all the support and all the messages on Twitter, Facebook, and other social media. We enjoy putting this together for the Tide Nation. We hope you enjoyed it. And roll Tide. Enjoy the trip to Nashville, those that are going to attend in person and those that watch it on TV. Enjoy your weekend to college football. Should be some very interesting matchups along the lines with, as we already talked about, with Georgia hosting the Mississippi State Bulldogs and Kentucky facing Coach McElwain at home, undefeated, coming off that big road win at South Carolina, a 4-straight win over the Gamecocks. Kentucky looking to stay unbeaten and end that long losing streak to the Florida Gators, and we'll talk all about that next week on BAMS Radio. Everyone have a good night, and again, roll Tide.